This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Continued chaos at the border, especially now that you have such an influx of Haitian migrants. Some of them had already been in South and Central America for quite some time, but due to what's happening over there, it sent them fleeing for the border. Homeland Security trying to grapple with the humanitarian crisis. The president was at the UN for his first address, talked heavy combo about the pandemic and climate change. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, hope that you are safe and sound wherever you hail from. Let's start with Joe Biden. The president made a case that the United States on Tuesday can compete with China while cooperating to confront whatever the global threats are. And he was trying, I think, to reassure allies with growing complaints or qualms about American leadership. It's interesting. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the UK, actually came to the U.S. to push for his ambitious climate commitments and to kind of, I guess, have a time with Joe Biden. So in other words, to make nice, as somebody described it to me, especially with what's going on with France that we've talked about a lot, and the whole submarine fiasco, at least in the eyes of France, where they were going to get billions and billions and then ended up getting reworked out of a deal with the Australians. Send in the cavalry, and that's what it looked like, because there are these crazy images of Homeland Security on horseback grabbing some of the people that are trying to cross illegally into the country, but it's so out of control. You know, the numbers that you're hearing, 15,000, somebody said 20,000 to me. We don't know the exact number. But let me tell you, go to whatever search engine you have, look at the video, look at what's out there, look at the pictures, and you'll see what a nightmare it is. But there were cameras and there were recorded video scenes on Sunday along the Rio Grande where you did have horse-mounted Border Patrol agents trying to grab people, and they use them to the animals to kind of push them back toward Mexico, because again, what are they doing? They're caught in the middle of all of this, and you look at the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, who traveled there on Monday to the makeshift camp in Del Rio, Texas, where you have this hair-raising crisis, and he said that the DHS is going to look into the incident, and there was heavy criticism about that because, of course, it was pumped out all over the place, the videos were, and the Department of Homeland Security says they don't tolerate the abuse of migrants in our custody, and we take the allegations seriously and all that kind of stuff. In the meantime, it's about getting more agents there and trying to figure it out and unpack what's happening at the border, because it's pretty out of control. And whether the president is a Republican or a Democrat, it doesn't matter. It matters that we have this crisis at this moment. We have this crisis going on. So typically, the Border Patrol would use mounted officers to go to some of those difficult areas, the terrain that's like roadless, and not usually as crowd control, but this is how, I think that's how bad it got, that what do we do? What do we have to push this back? So tensions are massively high. And they're high at the camp, and they've been building because you've got thousands of migrants, I'll emphasize that again, that are crossing the river daily since last week. It's overwhelmed the U.S. capacity, even so much so that, again, they have to close off the main crossing point used by the migrants to enter the U.S. and return to Mexico for supplies. The food shortages are there. The conditions are horrific. And under that bridge, it's starting to improve a little bit, but you still have too many people. And the idea is get the flights out. And they've got flights that are going from Texas to Haiti, like a couple of flights daily to just load people up and get them out. And of course, in Haiti, you've got gang violence, the assassination of the president that happened back in July. You had the crazy 7.2 magnitude earthquake last month, and people don't want to go back. And people that were already had left the country and were looking to go from Mexico or Central America or even South America for freedom into the United States, some of them will get that, because Haitians who were present in the U.S. before July 29th will get the due process, right? They'll get the due process, unlike those that came in at the last minute because of things that are happening. And I've said this a couple of times, but it's worth noting again, there's a thing called Title 42. A federal judge ordered the Biden administration last week to stop using Title 42 to return family groups, but he stayed the order until the end of September. The Biden administration has appealed the ruling. You know where Title 42 came from? Donald Trump's administration of being able to expel people under this title in an emergency situation, and that's exactly what they're using because they have to do it. They, you know, Mayorkas sent 600 additional agents and other people to Del Rio to increase the security and the staffing, but this increased amount of people they're trying to process or send back, it's out of control. It's an untenable, is the word I keep using, situation, because I can't think of a better one. It's just that insane. All right, worth noting here, we passed a sad milestone, whether you realize it or not. U.S. coronavirus deaths now have surpassed the toll of the 1918 flu epidemic. And that's one of the things that I guess Biden talked about in his speech and calling for unity during the pandemic and working together to end the current pandemic and prevent future ones. And you've got, you know, the UN Secretary General criticizing wealthy nations for hoarding, he says, coronavirus vaccines, while people in developing nations are still waiting for their first doses. And then in between that, of course, we have the vaccine and anti-vaccine. There is the big divide everywhere, not just in the United States. Certainly we see it in Australia, we see it in the UK, and you know, we just talked to someone the other day in Melbourne, and they are the city in a country with the most consistent lockdowns, serious lockdowns. So by the way, the US coronavirus death toll in now is more than 675,000 corona-related deaths in the U.S. reported since February. And this is because who knows before that, right? But this is reported from February 29th, 2020. And this is all the data that's been tracked according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the numbers we have from Johns Hopkins University. So, you know, you think about that. And then you think about how somebody said to me, you know, how many people died of influenza in the United States from 1918 to 1919, along with the more than 49 million killed globally during the deadliest pandemic of the 20th century? And, you know, there you go. 4.7 million people globally. But you got to put it into context. The population in the U.S. is more than three times as large as it was a century ago. In 1918, the estimated 675,000 deaths represented about 1 in 150 Americans. Currently, it's 1 in 500 Americans. All right, on that note, hang with us. We're going to introduce you to a really cool guy with a great book next.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown, small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps. As restrictions come to an end and you get back to work, do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Brought to you by Bank of America. A recent Bank of America survey found 61% of college students practice saving. However, just 45% create and stick to a budget. Budgeting is a critical lifelong skill and allows you to save strategically. Aaron McCullen, Head of Deposit Products at Bank of America.
As a college student, it's all too easy to overspend and bust your budget. Every dollar counts when purchasing textbooks, restocking the fridge, or catching up with friends over dinner. When you head back to campus and activities ramp up, creating or updating your budget is critical. Also look for ways to start saving for the future, even if it's a small amount. Automatic saving tools like Bank of America's Keep the Change make it easy to incorporate savings into everyday college life.
Keep the Change rounds purchases made with a Bank of America debit card to the nearest dollar and transfers the change to a savings account. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/students.
Robert joins us, and he's written a fascinating children's book that really adults can certainly read this too, called Jerome. And our off-air conversation made me want to go to Nova Scotia and this wonderful place that he describes. Peter, thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure.
Tell me about the road to writing Jerome and what it's all about.
Well, Sandy Cove is one of the most beautiful places you could ever imagine. It is right on the coast. It's on a peninsula south of Digby. And my mother-in-law was born there. And she remained there for about, 10 years, 8 years, and then moved to the States. We started going up there about, 30-plus years ago. And we ultimately bought a cabin. And down below the cabin on a beach is a rock called Jerome's Rock. And it has an interesting history. A man was found in front of this rock in 1863, and he basically had no legs. And they don't know where he came from or how he got there. And ever since then, there's been a sense of mystery about Jerome, you know, the mystery of Jerome and all this and that and so forth. And we started going up there, and we had two corgis at that time, Copper and Andy. And we still continue to have corgis to this day. And I thought it would be kind of interesting to write a short story for kids about two corgis finding this bundle on the beach in front of this rock. And because that's basically what happened. A young man named Collie, who was part of the Albright family, lived in a cabin up where our cabin is now, but across the street. And the foundation is still there. and of this old building. And basically, colleagues saw this. One of his kids saw this bundle and thought it was a dead seal, and went over to it, and it turned out to be this man with no legs and barely alive. He ran up the hill, got his grandmother, and they all came down and discovered basically what turned out to be Jerome. And the reason he was called Jerome was because the only words they could get out of his mouth sounded like Jerome. So they figured, oh, well, this is interesting. And as the story, the history of this, the true history of it goes on, some folks interpreted that as perhaps being Genoa, Italy. So maybe he came from Genoa. And there's a lot of interesting stuff that has come up over the years about this character, who I, after reading about him, I started to really feel kind of badly for him because he's suffered so tremendously, throughout his life. He died in, I think it was 2009, and in Metegan, which is on the French shore. Because he lived in Sandy Cove for a while, people took care of him, and then they shuffled him off down to Metegan, and he lived a pretty miserable life. People didn't particularly find him, warm and comfortable. And he really didn't speak much. And so that's a little bit of the background. And our dogs, I decided to have them all of a sudden be able to speak in the book. So they can talk with Jerome. And so can their friend Otter can also speak to Jerome and through some sort of, magic. And so they finally end up taking him up and putting him in this, well, what's really a cellar hole now across from our cabin. And they build a little place for him there. And basically some families in Sandy Cove decided it was time to move him up the neck to the poorhouse. Now, the poorhouse outside of Digby was this huge building and was scary as hell. I mean, it really looked awful, later in years. And it burnt to the ground, actually, about, I think, 30 or 40 years ago. But anyway, so they took him up to the poorhouse, and where he remained briefly. And while they were in there, one of the dogs, Andy, had a coughing fit. And it turns out that when he'd been licking Jerome's hand on the beach, a ring had lodged on his tooth, which got spit out on the floor and was inscribed inside. And it looked to be a very strange language. So they took this this ring up to a man in Digby whose name was Stormy, and he was known to repair concertinas. And that comes in because I played a concertina, and I think I got to throw that in there. So he's repairing his concertina, and he reads the inscription, and he said, this looks to be, Gaelic. And it turns out it indicated that Jerome might be of royalty. And so everybody got excited about that, and they got Jerome out of the poorhouse because they didn't want this bundle, as the director of the poorhouse referred to him as a bundle sitting in the corner. They didn't want this. So Jerome went back to Sandy Cove, and they built his hut really nicely. And the book ends with all the community surrounded by Jerome and Copper and Andy, all sort of around a big campfire on the beach. In a nutshell, that's sort of the story.
Oh, the story is wonderful, and such history that you also weave in knowing and loving that place. Peter, what do you hope kids and others who read it take away from reading Jerome?
Oh, I think probably how amazing dogs are. The book really is about dogs. We've had corgis for a long time. And Copper and Andy were really very special. All of our dogs have been special. We have two right now, Bracken and, Dakin. Dakin, which is Jane's family name. And they're tough. They're great. and I think also this sense of history about Jerome, to me, is just fascinating because this guy suffered so much. And how these dogs related to him. And the interesting thing, the mystery of Jerome, for some interesting reason, people didn't want to really publicize that they really think that Jerome basically was injured in a lumbering accident in New Brunswick, and that he was not really working there, but was evidently had gotten offloaded from a boat. And they think he was wandering around and managed to get injured by a tree that fell. And a community over there took him in and took care of him for I'm not sure how long. But then they decided he was too much of a burden on the parish. And they found somebody who they paid not a lot of money to take him theoretically back to Genoa. Well, this unscrupulous character basically put him on this boat and took him as far as he thought he should, which happened to be the beach in Sandy Cove, where they offloaded him. And so they think that probably that is the history, and it's pretty well documented, actually, that he'd lost his legs. And if you really look into it, you're going to discover that his legs were surgically removed by a pretty decent surgeon. And they think they know who that was and when it was and where it was. But there's an element of mystery that, you know, the community of Sandy Cove and those folks that live on Digby Neck, which mainly is comprised of, was historically and still is to a degree, handliners. But of course, people aren't handlining anymore. You know, they're going out in real boats, fishing boats and lobstering and scalloping. But this mystery has kept them going, and still there's a sign, The Mystery of Jerome. And Julia Sawyer, in her book that she wrote in 1942 called Fog Magic, certainly carried that on because she mentions Jerome in that book. And just a whole sort of interesting history behind this character.
Boy, no kidding. Was this a joy to write this book for you? It certainly sounds like it.
Yeah, I had a good time. It was fun. but I'll have to say, you know, because you wrote, and I don't know whether you still write now or not, but proofreading is a nightmare. I mean, because you're always worried you're going to miss something. And, of course, you do. And then all of a sudden, oh, my God, you know, and you have to go back and revise. and I've just finished working on a book of short stories and poems, which is sort of autobiographical. that was fun because, you know, if you write poems at times, I wrote a poem when Bertram, one of our corgis, died. And, you know, it's the last poem in this book. And I read it, when I read it, I'm back there almost in tears.
I love it. That says something about your poetry, that's for sure. We can't wait for that to come out. Peter Liburt, the book is Jerome. You can pick it up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold. It really is a very, very good book. I encourage you to go and get it. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Well, you're welcome. What a treat.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott visited the Del Rio area Tuesday, where thousands of migrants have gathered looking for a way into the United States. Abbott has recently asked President Biden to declare a federal emergency on the border, which would allow more federal resources to assist with the nearly 14,000 people who have gathered under the Del Rio International Bridge. The governor tells Fox News about the efforts he's undertaking as the state struggles to respond to the surge.
So here's what Texas is doing, because we know that Biden is not going to secure the border. So Texas is stepping up to secure the border. I signed a budget where Texas is providing $3 billion by the state of Texas to secure the border. And what we're doing with that helps stop the flow of people coming across that dam that you see there in Del Rio.
And you're listening to USA Radio News. Congressional Democrats passed a measure Tuesday that would fund the federal government through December while suspending the country's debt ceiling until 2022. That bill passing along a strict party-line vote, but it's not expected to get through the Senate. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell tells reporters that his caucus would support a continuing resolution that includes certain funding, but not a measure that raises or suspends the debt ceiling.
We're prepared to support a continuing resolution with assistance for Louisiana, with additional funds to replenish Iron Dome. What we're not prepared to do is to relieve the Democratic President, Democratic House, Democratic Senate from their governing obligation to address the deficit.
This is USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
We head to Australia for a conversation with Lucas Jones. He's written a book called, I love this title, I mean, this will tell you, it really packs a punch, Weaponized Intellectualism. So, Lucas, first of all, like I said, the title really does nail what you talk about. What is weaponized intellectualism?
There are two dimensions to weaponized intellectualism. There's a natural dimension, and that is the dimension of social, community, need for governance. So we have intellectuals who are intelligent, who have proven themselves to be valuable, to provide leadership in our nation. And so that's where we acknowledge that people that have got a great education and are intelligent about the way they do things are necessary for our government in our nations for peace, for the establishment of a well-working social order. The problem is that there is also another intelligence from a biblical perspective who, if you try to come up against him and fight with him intellect to intellect, you're always bound to lose. And that's the enemy, who we know to be the forces of Satan. Now, the weaponized intellectualism is a way of looking at the reality that the supernatural forces and the intelligence of Satan has been able to infiltrate and utilize the intellectual and education capacities of people that we consider to be intelligent, and thereby our societies are now, through legislation, which is the outgrowth of a form of intellectual process, but because there's a satanic nature behind it and insidiously hidden in it, we end up making laws that serve Satan's purposes rather than God's. And that's what weaponized intellectualism is about. It's about seeing that these forces that are legislating and that are behind much of the intelligence in our governmental world is at the heart of it coming from satanic forces.
And one of the things you and I talked about off the air, and this is something that, I could fill up shows and shows of it, and I have talked about it, is political correctness. I mean, it's an interesting word, looking at political correctness. And to you, what has political correctness done, especially to the Western world?
Sure. First of all, let me say, when we abandon godliness, the understanding of principles, practices, then we create a vacuum. And that vacuum will always be filled with something else. And so I once saw a bumper sticker that said something like, witchcraft is the natural religion of an unbelieving people. So, and that's my paraphrase. So what I say is, why are we, in an idolatrous way, saying, oh, yes, let's all be politically correct. I say, hang on, how about we first get correct with God, who's far above the authority and the legislative agenda of political motifs like this? Number two is it's being told what to think and what to say. And I've discovered, in fact, just recently, I'm having a wonderful experience in God, realizing that not conflict that's destructive, but conflict of different ideas and tension between one perspective and another perspective that can't be resolved is the pathway to new discoveries. And I was just writing down a few words this morning that when God created our lives, he created it as a shared environment with him, which meant that it was okay never to have all of the answers because our Heavenly Father, who we were in relationship, has all of the answers. So it was an interaction between us on an intellectual level in the garden. That meant when disagreements or things came up that we couldn't understand, it was the pathway to a new discovery as the omniscience of God was able to help us and we would grow out of that. So humanity stops growing as a result of political correctness.
What's your biggest worry if the path keeps going this direction? And, specifically you were talking of the U.S. and Australia, the U.K., the EU, and the things that we've seen recently that have happened in the last decade, really.
Well, my worry is in two dimensions as well, because we're already there. In spite of the supposed superior nature of this intellectual agenda of governments, we have sex trafficking, euthanasia, abortion, genocide, and the persecution of Christianity on such a broad scale. It's not as if we've yet to experience what this is going to birth. We're living in it now. Secondly, I believe that this is the pathway that will bring us to the climax of the ages. And this is another thing that once you start getting into it, you recognize that the Word of God, in a few simple words, can sometimes capture truth about the direction and the dynamics of human nature that take books and books and books for human beings to understand, yet it's just a few words in the Bible. And so where we're headed to is the end of the times of the Gentiles. What that means is Jews compared to Gentiles means there's the Jewish race and the rest of the world. So this rest of the world is headed towards a time where our wonderful experience of our political lives, our creative lives, our educational lives, our marital lives, our music lives are all going to be brought under the control of one person who thinks he's got the answers to it all. And that's, you know who? The Antichrist. And who fills him up? Satan. So that's a perfect picture of what's happening legislatively through the world right now. So things are bad right now. And we're a bit insensitized to it. And that's why I said my career in youth justice and the laws that I saw changing and shaping that began to grieve me, because we are destroying. This world is in a mode of destruction at the moment. And to a large degree, we've lied ourselves out of any practical application to fix it. We're only lying ourselves into it further developing until we get to the end of the time of the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. And Christ will need to return.
And you go deeper, of course, on all of this in your book. And we're speaking with Lucas Jones, and the book is Weaponized Intellectualism. You can get it on Amazon. At the end of the day, people listening to us, somebody reads it, a bunch of people read it, and people have already read it. What do you hope they take away from reading your book?
Oh, that's a good question. Insulted at the direction we're going, but passionate about the answers that the Word of God can give us to resolve those problems. I'm not totally set in a mindset of where we're at in the end times. In these end times, because we've got a God who is unbounded in his knowledge, there are things that he could share with us that revolutionize our world all over again. God's revolutionized the world several times. We've gone into decay, and he's revolutionized it a few times. We could do that all again and give ourselves another 100 years. But I think it would take the collective recognition, faith, and application of godly men and women worldwide and in their own countries to recognize the superior, I'm going to love this word that I'm about to say now, the superiority of the wisdom of the scriptures and of the God who gave it to us.
You are good with these words. That is powerful. And it goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, and what's happening and what we see happening in some of the sad tragedies. And you saw it with what you did in your career with so many of these kids that were lost, and then ultimately what happens to them, because the laws have radically changed so much that there really isn't something to help them get to the other side.
No, that's right. That's right. And in fact, it's burying them in a deceit that they think they've actually got all of the answers. And oftentimes these young people, by the time they're 18 years of age, have had more life experience than a 30 or a 40 year older. And that's not always a negative thing, but it's mainly a negative thing, because they've got no intellectual or mature capacities that come with a bit more time and education to give them perspective about that. The fact is that they're really naked, poor, blind, and depraved. Because this whole secular world just seems to be reflecting to them, you're okay, Jack. It's like the frog that gets put in the pot of cold water. The gas gets turned on, and eventually he dies because he doesn't feel the heat rising. He adjusts to it.
What a great way to end this. Weaponized intellectualism. Thank you so much, Lucas Jones, for coming on.
Oh, look, it's been really good. Thank you, thank you.
To your soul, down you must come. Hope, not my name. Free your soul. Here among the lies, you feel alive. Pain's not the same. Free your soul.
Brought to you by Bank of America. A recent Bank of America survey found 61% of college students practice saving. However, just 45% create and stick to a budget. Budgeting is a critical lifelong skill and allows you to save strategically. Aaron McCullen, Head of Deposit Products at Bank of America.
As a college student, it's all too easy to overspend and bust your budget. Every dollar counts when purchasing textbooks, restocking the fridge, or catching up with friends over dinner. When you head back to campus and activities ramp up, creating or updating your budget is critical. Also look for ways to start saving for the future, even if it's a small amount. Automatic saving tools like Bank of America's Keep the Change make it easy to incorporate savings into everyday college life.
Keep the Change rounds purchases made with a Bank of America debit card to the nearest dollar and transfers the change to a savings account. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/students.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
What will you do if there's a sudden food shortage? Given recent headlines, it seems likely, and at any moment. That's why it makes common sense to build your emergency food storage supply now, while you still can. Do it with the kind of food that stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Food that doesn't go bad like what you get at the grocery store. Whose food should you trust? The largest preparedness company in America, My Patriot Supply. We've served millions of American families going on 14 years. At MyPatriotSupply.com, our mission is your survival. Our emergency food could definitely be your lifesaver when the peanut butter hits the fan. Choose from dozens of delicious meal kits that provide over 2,000 calories a day, which is what your body needs. Order today and your food will ship fast in unmarked boxes to protect your privacy. Don't wait. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Rita Atkins joins us from a wonderful place, South Africa, just an hour outside of Pretoria. And her book is called Sitting in His Presence, Never Mundane. What a terrific title. She was a teacher for 40 years, and we had a wonderful off-air conversation about what she's doing now and what her life has been like and how she encourages so many to look outside of their own world, because we think it's going to be, as she told me, we think it's going to be smooth and wonderful, and then something happens and we all get thrown curveballs, so to speak. Rita, thanks so much for joining us.
Lovely to be here. Thank you, Kate.
So let's talk about, first of all, your life. You grew up on a farm. What was that like, and what led you to teaching? Like I said, four decades. That's incredible.
Yes, it was incredible. Exhausting, but incredible. Living on a farm is just wonderful. Life is plain, life is simple. You learn patience, you learn to persevere, you never give up, and nature surrounds you, and it's very free and simple and open.
And so you go from that, then you go into the teaching profession. Did you ever think you'd be a teacher?
I think I did, in a way. It's what I always wanted to do. Maybe it was payback time for my teachers.
I like that. So now it leads you to this book, Sitting in His Presence, Never Mundane, which, of course, you can get on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any place where great books are sold. So what made you decide to write this book?
I'm a journaler. I like to write. I love to sit and write down nice things that have happened, exciting things that I discovered, little discoveries that I made. I write down my sadnesses, I write down things, how I got out of them, how I managed to get up and keep going. And sharing from my journal with other people made me realize that a lot of them actually got a lot out of this. It was like an encouragement to them. So I thought, well, why not put it all in a book? Because it could help other people who find themselves in a life situation that they never expected.
In the things that have happened to you, what was the most difficult thing that happened and the hardest to get through?
Sure, I would say losing my husband was the most difficult. I think also a lot of rejection, because when you're kind of a person who thinks out of the box, people think you're a bit weird and a bit crazy, and possibly I am. So you get rejected a lot, and then sometimes it happens time after time after time until you want to give up. And that's where the first chapter in my book, Mundane, will teach people what happened that I decided I'm getting up.
Yeah, so tell us, give us a little sneak of that. What was it that clicked inside of you? Because so many people, Rita, that are listening to us can't get to that spot. What was it that got you moving?
You know, I wish I could say that it was lightning and thunder and stuff like that, but it actually wasn't. I love to walk, so I was out walking one morning, thinking, oh, well, another day, same old, same old. And I happened to stop. We were living along the Indian Ocean at that time. There was a little rock pool. And in that rock pool, I saw a number of tiny little, very ordinary fish swimming around and around and around and around. And I smiled because I said, just like my life, just going around and around and around in circles. But I did something this time. I stopped and I continued to look, and then something happened. And you have to read the book to find out.
You are very good at that. That's what all those teaching skills come into play. And I'm not going to give it away either. She's right. You have to get the book. And when you wrote the book, what was that process like for you to realize, you know, I need to write this book? Was it fun for you to do it?
It was fun because I like writing, but you know what? It was a challenge and it was a lot of hard work. Because when you're out in the backside of nowhere and you're technologically disadvantaged like I am, you stop and you think, oh, you know, really, what am I doing? Who's ever going to read this book? But you have to persevere. You have to be disciplined. And if there's any budding writers out there, the biggest stumbling block is distractions. Don't allow yourself to be distracted. So waging through all my journals, I soon started to filter through what I thought would help other people, because that meant so much to me. Little life lessons and little nuggets in life that really helped me a lot in nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and you will help a lot of people in the book with those nuggets. Tell me about something I think people will find fascinating. You know, you always hear, well, it's about giving, 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 and you'll get so much more when you give and when you help other people. And you learned that lesson because you were in a wonderful place just outside of Pretoria, like I said, about an hour or so. But right down the street, there were people that were struggling. And what happened when you retired from teaching?
What happened was I first of all went to leaders and elders and told them what I wanted to do, and they thought I was totally crazy and insane and discouraged me from doing it, but it continued to bug me. And to me, when a thought or an idea doesn't go away, then you must pursue it. So one day, with my husband's blessing, he was still alive, I got into a taxi. Now, if you live in South Africa, you'll know what I'm talking about, taxis. I went into the closest township where a lot of very, very, very poor people live, and I just started walking the streets, just looking, just listening, just waiting for opportunities. and my life was never the same again, because there's so many sick, so many sad, so many lonely, so many that are just giving up hope. And for me, a white South African, it also healed a lot of racial barriers, because here I was coming to them. And they always enjoyed the fact that if I said I was coming tomorrow at 10 o'clock, I would make sure that I was there tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And they always appreciated that, something that I always took for granted. They said, because we're poor, people tell us a lot of things, but they never keep their promises. So it's very important that you keep your promise and you keep your word. And then you soon find out what the real challenges and the real difficulties were. And to be honest, I sat down with a group of children one day, and being a teacher, it was natural for me to sit with children. And I said to them, what is your dream? You know, thinking that they would say they would want to be a doctor or a nurse or a teacher or a politician or the president of the country, what came back to me absolutely stopped me dead in my tracks, because they said, if I could just have a plate of food every day.
Wow. Wow. Oh, and that's heartbreaking to think of that, to think that so many people could help. How rewarding was it for you to do that?
Well, it was amazing. I made a lot of mistakes, to be honest, because what I did was I went about it the wrong way. I started running from pillar to post, begging for bread and leftover food and whatever. And then one day I had what I call a light bulb moment, and I said, this is not the right way to do things. You've got to teach people to plant their own, and that's where I started my food garden programs.
And what's happened now with those programs?
Well, I've been as far as Tanzania with it.
Wow. And so you helped so many people in learning what they could do and feeding themselves, etc.
Yeah, I found that they actually want to take care of themselves. They're not really looking for handouts. They're looking for handouts.
Yeah. There's so many life lessons in that. And again, the book is Sitting in His Presence, Never Mundane. What do you hope people take away from reading your book, Rita?
I want them to take away the fact that they are precious, they're valuable, and that life is never mundane. If you'll just step outside your door, open your eyes and see possibilities. And when you read my book, you'll see how very ordinary things that we take for granted open doors to many things, going back to that fish story in Mundane. I mean, that little chapter started a whole new, different way of life.
Yeah, and there is the lesson in that, that's for sure. Rita Eckens, yeah. Thanks so much. Again, you can get the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of those great spots. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
It was wonderful, Kate, and thank you for what you do to help writers like me. We appreciate it so much.
And I'm so thrilled to introduce you to so many people. Trust me, it's my honor. And thanks to all of you for listening to the show. Remember to make it count, everybody. Do you feel like you're doing what you were made for? Do you love what you do? Do you feel inspired or at least pretty happy most days? In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big and Become Extraordinary, I share the secrets that rock stars shared with me from the business world, people like Sir Richard Branson, or sports hall of famers like former Cowboy great Emmitt Smith. All of them had one thing in common. They paid attention to their gut, followed their dreams, and didn't listen to the critics. George Eliot says it's never too late to be who you might have been. Pick up a copy of Deal Your Own Destiny on Amazon today.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop. And cancer dies in oxygen. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.